engineer it in mining or so. So I agree, land is a space in my philosophical way. A space ought to really be much more professionalized. So the idea of a registrar of the CPA, so far as it is, seems to me very, very super. Quite a good
what becomes the role of that registry? Maybe I didn't read properly. Would you have people who are technical support? So these people don't plant beans when they should be plowing a sugar beet. So technical support in that office of the registrar, one of the directorates, if you like, perhaps doing technical support, exploring, do we have minerals underneath this land that we are, and so on. So the registrar, have you thought about the capacity of that office? Also social facilitation office, perhaps still under the registrar, by which disputes, you talk disputes there, lots of disputes, and so under the registrar, what do we see there? What have you seen there? Are you seeing just registration only, which is each CPA, the day for the registration certificate is done? What are the duties there? I still hold the view that CPAs ought to be organs of people's economic power and ownership, and therefore there's a need for some form of advocacy there. So, but again, as you clarify, but some of the issues when we talk later, maybe even 10 months down the line, I don't know, we might just keep to tighten up. You have defined the community, but I thought that maybe you need a second chance to once again have a classical scenario of a community. Sometimes it's family, sometimes it's occupiers and all that. So what are you really looking at in terms of defining the community? The last one, Chair. Can you assure us that with these amendments, once we've taken them through, we're not likely going to experience the difficulties the one I know best is the Rama. I do know there's something about I know there's something about that. I know there are other cases. Somewhere, the big ones that you were told about, there were huge amounts of money to pay, and then there was, So, are you saying through the proposals that you were forwarding in the environment, are you saying it will take care of it? But like I said, the best example for me is Rama, where people just run away with murder. And they go to one court and say, no, but the bank has no authority. They go, so are we taking care of all of that? Oh, yeah, just forgot a small one. People who want to sell, you say some of the same, then the first option is to sell to the state. Wouldn't the state have paid anyway to get those people to get their land back? Ordinarily, so they must still sell back, so the state gets us this piece of land. And 2-3 months or 3 years down the line, or even 30, we sell back to the state. But the state has facilitated. It does look like, to me, hypothetically, there is a need to say, to understand that it would be at a very, very, it's more like giving back. Hey, we can't use this land, we're fighting all the time, we're traveling over this land. Please take this land back, state. Than us say, let's sell. Because state gives us this land, that's a benefit. We use, we find, and then we want to sell back to them. So the state says, I see the state paying twice right here.
I just
want
to say,
Thank
you. sell the land. So why do you just allow them to get money because they're going to sell it anyway?
I don't think anyone here wants people not to take the land. We want people to take the land and we want people to use the land to be prosperous. So I think at the moment you start getting into a situation where you give somebody land and you say, you can't do anything with it, you know, you must keep it, you can't do anything with it, then it also starts to negate the whole purpose of ownership, to be able to use your asset to prosper. So I think we must be careful at this stage. My feeling is I want to first see what happens in the public hearings. I want to get a better grasp of the problems. I think in my mind, you know, and I'm speaking only for myself here, in my mind I'm wondering why CPAs, whether there's not a total substitute for CPAs that will work better. There's various other models that could also be looked at, but I'm at this stage, I'm listening to the various arguments. I want to understand exactly, are we dealing with symptoms, or are we actually solving the problem, and in our solution to the problem, aren't we going to make matters worse, or are we going to make matters better? So I'm personally not in favour of some kind of a total ban on the selling of land, because you might then end up with people not being able to use their asset. And you must be able to use your asset, and I do believe that's the point of property ownership. What you don't want, and I think that the problem you don't want to stop land trade. What you want to do is the kind of fly-by-night type of scenario where people get something that quickly sell it. You want to ensure that people actually responsibly use that asset to prosper, not use it as a fly-by-night quick cash injection. That I agree with. That we need to look at how to incentivize that.
I think we're going to have time to see what is their intention of giving the people land. Is their intention for the people to use their land or to resell it? Because I think we have also to look at that when you're talking about their restitution. Because in the restitution again, there's this choice of financial compensation vis-à-vis the land restoration. So what is the difference? If people are selling their land, are we addressing the land ownership or what? So we need to, or the financial, the skewed financial control, you know. So, but now is just a briefing, asking questions, but time will come when we need to go deeper into this issue and see what is the intention of this thing.
Chair, I think one thing that I think we all agree on there is that we want the ownership structure to change. We don't need the inequalities of the past, the legacy that we want it to change. I think that the question is for every proposal there's in a sense something else that we need to take in mind. And my sentiment is at this stage of the process what we should actually be flagging is all the contentious ideas and the counter arguments that we can apply our thinking at a later stage. Okay.
The issue of the animal welfare was a challenge to us. Because I think the principal effort just talk if I look forward, talk about the animal report, but the animal report was not in line with the animal report. With the submission and checking of the annual report as per the GFMA. annual report as per the TFMA, so that when we consider the annual report of the department, we also consider the annual report of the CPA. Then the other one, on the issue of the financial compensation, I understand that you use the current office space to second other staff to the office of the registrar or the deputy registrar. But when looking at that 19 million, looking at the social impact, the 19 million that should be needed. Those members were saying that yesterday we met with the department, there was an issue of the capacity constraint. So then when you're saying you're going to second others, then you start to ask yourself, where are you going to get those people from? Because currently, there's that challenge from the department that if a person resigns, if a person dies, you can't replace that particular person. So can we get just a clarity on that? I understand that, if I'm correct, the term of office of the CPA executive is 5 years.
On the constitution.
Can't you make it
on average?
Yes. Be the same in all these CPAs or guide or advice for the term of office to be the same in all. You know, people must not be keen in those executives that you are an executive for 20 years. Everyone takes terms and conditions to the community members, you know. The CPA is yours now because I was an executive member from 1996 to date. Take the situation of Rama. Whereby people, they don't want AGM to persist. They don't want the re-election of new executive members, you know. And also, I think we need to just take that into consideration. People refusing to hand over the document. You've said in one of the offenses that if a person destroys the document. But in Rama, there were certain instances where they refused to hand over when the department wants some documentation. Even the banks were refusing to hand over some bank statements to the department when the department wants to, after you've appointed an administrator or what, the intervention that you've made, whereby the bank has refused to hand over some of the documents to the department. People threatening others to go to the AGM, all those are the Rama experience. Yeah, if you have got the call for the AGM, you should be calling other people have been present, they're not going to go to that, they're going to kill you, all those things. I think we need to take all those things into, although we can't change this principal act into service, but we need to try, the amendments need to try and address some of the challenges that we've experienced so far.
Can you just talk to the comments, questions that you have by me?
Thank you, Chair. I think just as we begin to respond to the questions, I think the first question maybe advocate that we should start with would be in terms of where is the bill right now and the current status, and then I think we can start to talk to the technical issues.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good morning to all the honorable members of the committee and my colleagues. That's where the bill is. The last the that we are involved in a department is to, in the course of the deal, is to get confirmation from the chief special advisor that we satisfy the deal. And after that, they are the ones who are responsible for introducing the bill in Parliament. And what we are required to do as the department is to publish a notice to the effect that the minister should be introducing the bill in Parliament. That's what needs to happen. Now we have an opinion from the chief health officer. They said the 25th of January 2017, where they confirmed that they looked at the bill. And if I can just read the concluding remarks, which is what we extracted from them. They say that we have scrutinized the provisions of the bill in order to ensure that it is considered the Constitution. We are satisfied that the provisions of the bill are consistent with the Constitution. This is what we ask for them, and when we are happy, we are also happy. And they take the process forward. That's with regard to the state of that. Now the other part that I refuse to discuss, the publication of the notice, is in terms of the joint rules of parliament, where we are required, and it's a rule of the public domain. We tried to publish the notice, I think, for some time last year, around November, December. And we only realized later that the government had failed to publish that. We only became aware during the course of last week that they failed to publish that notice. They gave reasons that they got contradictory messages from administrators, some they said they must proceed, some they said they mustn't proceed. That's where we are. I have personally requested them on Monday to redo the publication. That's the part where we encountered some challenges. And we have been assured that that notice will appear in next week government agenda, Friday. That's with regard to where we are on the deal. I don't know that I can proceed maybe to some comments, or we deal with that issue.
I share Honorable Chavelin's view on this. I think I think that it's regrettable. Perhaps on advertising, it also forewarns all other legislators that when you have a piece of legislation, you should then get a confirmation that the address has gone through and is in the copy. Just to specify out there. For argument's sake, let's say the advertisement fails and we proceeded with regarding it. Then the law is going to fail the constitutional court judgment because it's a profound procedural matter on transparency and in political terms on the legitimacy of the legislation. But I really prefer officials who are honest and innocent. Anyone was going to dig up until that point, definitely, that's assured. So I would rather have you come out clean that between last year and now, there was a lapse of focus. And what I do not know, I will not dig this, I would love to dig. What was this confusing signals by who? Because there was some confusion of signals to the government, printers or publishers. What was the base of this and who was doing it? Actually, I'm really thinking aloud. I wouldn't wish that you respond to that one. I would just wish to make to end, Chair, on a comment that, well, it's good that it's back on the card, Chair, and I suppose the publication period is usually about 3 to 4 weeks, and when we come back, I guess in any event, we will then be able to deal with it, to fly with it. I'm saying so, Chair, because I asked, where is it? Can we fly with it? And lastly, FTTG, laws are the most important, from where I sit, important tool of all the work that we do, because they reverse the dispensation that we would seek to forget about, especially in our generation, in our time. So the thing that has got to do with all the laws, I remember when I arrived in 2014, we were supposed to forward us about 5 pieces of legislation, and this is about the first or the second after EFTA. So on laws, you really, department, FTTG, you really not doing as much justice. So can you please pull up the stock? Pull up the stock. I like Dr. Manoel, very much. Hey, I pulled up my stock. Now they are really up here. You know, please pull up your stock. Please pull up your thoughts. On laws, I don't think you're really doing well. Honestly, I don't think you're doing well. But remember, laws, if anything, is one of the major tools to liberate the people and to really reverse the apartheid colonialist legal system.
Thank you. I think the government
needs
to make sure that they follow all the proper processes, and that until we finalize the legislation. So we're not going to subtract any legislation. Over to you, Captain Tichy.
No, Chair, thank you very much, and we do apologize. This is an administrative error on the side of us. We will ensure that we have the controls in place. And even on Bonnie, if you weren't going to ask us the question, we were going to volunteer this information, because I discovered it yesterday, and I realized that given the current scenario where some of our bills get returned because of administrative issues, we had to make sure that this was done correctly. So they will tell you that I already, yesterday when checking the preparation for today, discovered this. Then we had asked that this matter be urgently attended to. So we will ensure that by the time the May session comes back, then we are ready having followed. Ask the team then to answer in terms of the technical issues.
Madam Chair, maybe could also directly apologize. It happened under my watch. It was a mistake saying that I should have followed. I've made it more concerned that individual capacity. Is that something that you say the minister intends to publish? He doesn't have time for it. We apologize for that. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will, my colleagues have agreed that I can start with maybe more legal response to the comments that they made, but that they will still mostly the policy and implementation issues where they are. Quickly indicate the issue I'm going to be commenting on, and then the first one is the one that deals with the distribution of the CPAs and the allocated to majority to require for that. Secondly, the issue of offences, how we provide for them in the Bill and the Act. and thirdly the issue of the breach of the constitution, thirdly the issue around the distinction between a community and a CPA, which has been a point that has been raised, and the issue around the CPA that are put under administration. So I think the point was made about the cost of maintaining officials, how do we deal with that? And then also the issue around the issue about where they go. I think the rest of my colleagues on the dissolution, the if you look at Section 3 of Section 13 deals with the issue of the deregistration of the CPA, where it says initially it was intended to principal act. It was the Director General who, upon application by the association itself, may cause the association to be deregistered. But that also comes to the dissolution. You will notice that we are simply changing that role from the DG to the registrar now. And then that also comes to the amendment of the constitution of the CPA, where I'm looking from the position of the bill. I don't know which version of the bill the honourable member has, but I refer to clause 13.
Clause 13.
Okay, clause 13.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Look at clause 13, you look at subsection 3 thereof.
Page 1.
You will notice that in addition to the registrar having the power to apply for deregistration, for resist application deregistration, that must be supported by a resolution by at least 60% of members present at the meeting that took a resolution to deregister. So we still regard that 60% a majority to come to a decent to dissolve the CPA. Now on the offences, the offences I'll speak to it in relation to making breach of the constitution as an offence as well. And you notice that new offence we are creating with regard to breaching the constitution. It's only in relation to financial matters. It's not the breach of any provision of the constitution of the CPA. It's only in relation to financial matters of the CPA. And then, as is usually the case, where an act says it is an offense to do something, the call lies with the police now. It means the president will become aware. The transgression, in this case, means the department as well, must accord and just to enforce that particular section of the law. The issue of the distinction between a CPA and a community. That's our first time to distinguish in the case. Because what I said, whenever the CPAs were created as legal vehicles to hold property for communities, there have been some communities where there's no distinction between the community or the beneficiary role in the CPA as a legal entity to administer the affairs of the community in relation to land residents. So we're trying to make that distinction, that the CPA members are those that are going to be, referring to the committees, but they are going to be elected by the community to administer the affairs of the community in the form of the CPA. I hope that we are succeeding in that regard. I think that covers some of the issues that I thought maybe from drafting a legal conclusion, maybe from further discussion, but I then want my colleagues to see that later. Under administration. Okay, so if we look at clause 13, which amends section 13 of the Principal Act, if you look at clause 13, subsection 1. It that refers to the administration, putting the CP under administration. That happens as a result of the court order. The administration is a legal process. That somebody must apply to court. So the CP is put under administration. In this case, we are saying that administration is going to be under the register in terms of the... Initially, it was under the DG. The court will put the CP under the administration of the DG. We are saying it's going to be under the administration of the register. So the registrar can, in the meantime, while this case has been resolved, the registrar administers the affairs of the CP. And maybe this may also lead to a lot of challenges that are raised with regard to the Ramas. I'm just giving an example. That where there are a lot of problems in relation to people who have appointed themselves as kings, who refuse to vacate office, who refuse to account, maybe the one of the options would be to put that CP under administration, which means it was going to be administered by the individual or by the SMB system. That would be one of the options of the wire. A lot of disputes around this. You put under the administration of the registrar, then try to do the other issues of maybe holding fresh elections to be able to ensure that the persons are properly elected, but the country left on that on the existing structure of the country.
Yes, please. Yes, just on that one. Right at the bottom of page 26, where concurrence that clause 13. The last paragraph, 13C, where the concurrence of the Minister of Finance is required. Isn't it a laborious process to seek the approval or concurrence of the Minister of Finance? Is this what the Minister responsible for the administration of the state would need to? Because I'll classify that person so appointed as a interim service provider, if you like. Why does he need the approval of the Minister of Finance? I understand this person will be paid from the state, fiscus, but when the department normally appoints a service provider, does he from time to time need the concurrence of the Minister of Finance? What I'm getting at here is, can this be short-circuited?
But this is kind of how we normally draft provisions around payment of functionaries who are not in the public sector. But if a person is going to be appointed to do a certain function in terms of legislation, payment for the services whereas it's done by the minister, but it should be generally seen from the Minister of Finance to ensure that there is to ensure that there's some kind of oversight by session in terms of how much you pay the person who are not in the employer of the state. It's a standard position that we normally have with regard to almost all the positions where we assign functions to individuals not in the employer of the state.
With regard to the first question, which is the number of beneficiaries that are affected, so that are there in the 1,502 we don't have the figures as of now, but information can be provided. Then the second question was with regard to the position that talks about the abuse of power. Within PPH, where we think one of the things that we intend to say is to ensure that there is no abuse of power by the within PPH. And the Honorable Robert was asking, are the officials not the ones that are responsible for the abuse of power? If we entice the same officials without PPH, are we not creating problems? The context within which the abuse of power came about is in the conference, as I indicated in the background that I was in, we had the CPA conference in 2012. And one of the things that came out was members complained about the abuse of power by the executive committee. And then the context within which the abuse of power comes about is within that ambit of executive committee in the execution of their functions, then abusing the power that has been entrusted upon them. So that is the context. It's not in the context of the officials really agreeing with the functions of the CPA. Now, my colleague has spoken to, has spoken to the 60% column in the constitution. And he has already touched on the issue of the offences. And with regards to, Honorable Walter spoke about the need to tighten democracy, and also indicated that you will still need to seek opinion on the constitutionality of the provision that requires CPA to seek the minister's permission in the disposal of the property. I think that is more of a comment than a question. Then there was a question also from Honorable Jordan, where he wanted to find out if the listed challenges are the complete list of the challenges that we have. And the direct answer to that is no, that is not the complete list of the challenges that are there within CPA. But those are the overarching ones. We find that they cut across all other sub-challenges that are there within CPA. If we can address the one that I mentioned there, then we find that we are able to address the others that are manifested differently within CPA. Then, Honorable Tutani also asked in which way would the nature and structure of the CPA be affected by the amendment. When we came up with this amendment, these amendments were informed by the challenges that were put forth by the participants in the workshop. And one of the things that came out was that we need to look at aspects that may require legislative intervention. We need to look at aspects that may require administrative intervention, and other aspects that we just need to be addressed operationally without any legislative intervention. So CPA should still function normally as CPA, but what we intend to do is to close the loopholes that have been identified. So the executive committee will still be entrusted with the same function of managing the CPA, subject to the limitations that may be introduced by the various provisions that we are now introducing in this amendment bill. There was a question about from Honorable Shizane on how will monitoring and oversight be effected through this amendment. We have indicated when we come to the portfolio committee on previous occasions that one of the challenges that we have is capacity. And because of the challenge of capacity, the department is unable or limited in its ability to execute its oversight and monitoring function. So through this amendment, we're going to introduce a separate structure which will be dedicated towards the monitoring and overseeing the operations of the CPA. And the people that are currently there within the department, you will find among them there are those that are specialists when it comes to CPA work. And what we are proposing is to assign such individuals to the components that will be responsible for overseeing CPA. And in that way, we will be able to relieve them of the other functions that they are currently performing, like tenure functions related to ESAM or labor change or other tenure pieces of legislation, and dedicate their focus fully towards the operations of CPA. And we believe that by having people that are solely dedicated and focused on the operations of CPA, it will then become easy for the department to strain on the regular monitoring and overseeing the operations of the CPA. Unlike when they have to do CPAs today, tomorrow there is a decision. They can't focus on anything all over the place. So by assigning the specific functions that will be related to CPAs, we think we will be in a better position to plan effectively on how to carry out those monitoring and oversight function. Then the issue of the approval of the constitution of the CPA, currently we, in terms of the registration process for CPA, at the provincial level there are legal people that have to look at every constitution that has been drafted prior to that constitution being submitted for the purpose of registering the CPA. So even nationally, we have a person with a legal background that is also involved in the approval process. And on the issue of the current office accommodation, what do we mean by current? Is it current as it now, or will it be current even in future? it is not part of the amendment. It's just a note that is there to say, currently, we have office accommodation, and we have people that are accommodated within those offices. So if we assign them different functions, or we separate the functions and then assign them specific functions related to CPA, they will still be within those offices and will operate from them. On the issue of the question raised by Honorable Mandela regarding the capacity to execute the functions, we have a challenge in the department with regard to capacity. I think that question, the response is linked to the response I gave with regard to the dedicated personnel that we assigned the function to oversee and monitor CPA. And Honorable Chamberlain's question about the quorum, it's a comment that the quorums are still challenges in CPA. And it is true, in some CPA, we have still a challenge with regards to meeting the quorum. And in the amendment, we have to look at striking a balance between protecting the interests of the members vis-a-vis the ease of operation of CPA. If you have a CPA with maybe 100 members, and at any given time it is easy for members to meet and operate, then it is not a challenge. But if you find that at any given time you only get about 20% of the members that are meeting for purposes of getting the AGMs and other things, it becomes a bit of a challenge. But then the challenges that we have to address was we have to ensure that democracy reigns within CPA. And in doing that, we made it more of a requirement on the part of the CPA to ensure that there is maximum participation in the decision-making and operations of CPA. And that also will address the instances where I think my colleague has touched on it. Things like the forums where certain decisions in relation to property are taken. We have instances where we have reported to that properties that belong to CPA have sometimes been sold by minority within the CPA. So through the introduction of this minimum forums, what we will achieve is we will ensure that the majority of the members take part in the decision-making process leading up to whatever decision is taken in regard to property. And the requirement that such decisions have to be such decisions have to then be presented to the minister for him to rule. The objective in doing that is not just an administrative or bureaucratic process that we are having meeting. The purpose of us requiring them to notify the minister of such decisions for the minister to then be able to satisfy himself that all due processes have been followed, and all in all instances the members have been properly notified and they took part in the decision leading up to the taking of that decision. There was also a comment from the chairperson that maybe we might need to regulate the term of office for CPA offices. We, separate from this bill, we have had discussions internally within the department where we discussed the possibility of coming up with something like a pro forma constitution, which will be the fallback condition in the event that a CPA constitution or CPA is unable to draft a constitution or for one or any other reason, constitution is not applied either by a court or any other practice. So we will, in the drafting of the regulations, also consider that possibility of coming up with some standard clauses that should be in every constitution, those that cannot be changed and those that can be varied by the CPA in the drafting of the joint constitution. Thank you very much.
Issue on the time limit before the 18th. Important because it talks to a wide range of issues that the group of
I think many comments were made. For example, those are the issues that must be provided for in a CPA constitution. It is at the end of the formal deed itself, or at the end of the Principal Act. It is the shape to the Act. Even in the bid, at the end of the bid. My thing is that it's clause, this is clause
15.
It's the last clause, it says amendment of schedule. Yeah. So I'll just give you an example in relation to the sum of copies of the CPA committee. There was an issue that the Honourable Junior raised, which we did not respond in relation to the referral of the bill to the House of Representatives. And related issues around the role of traditional leaders. Section 26 of the Constitution that deals with bills that affect government does not specifically make reference to referral of bills to the opposition. If you look at the, I think it's the Quota Act, the Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act, that act provides that any national legislation that impact on traditional leaders or their role must be referred to that house for consultation purposes. And because this case deals with CPA, then some of which has been indicated by some of the members affect traditional leaders, some is the land over which the jurisdiction. It is in that context that the chief supervisor have advised that the bill must be referred to the House of Constitution. And on the role of traditional leaders in general, there have been conflicts in some areas. The example that I was given of the Wahatela is a good example where there was a conflict between the traditional leader in the community in relation to the same piece of land where the land was restituted to the CPA and the registration of the CPA lapsed in that it was a provisional one. It was referred to after 12 months it had to be registered permanently. There was a problem with the registration on a permanent basis. Now the traditional leader sought and ordered that the CPA no longer exists and therefore he must take control over all the land that he has. So that's how the case unfolded. And in the land claim court, the court found that the CPA existed despite the 12 months of the tour, but it was complied with all the requirements of the and then insisted that the land remain to be admitted to the CPA. The chief appealed to the Supreme Court of Appeal. The Supreme Court of Appeal found in favor of the chief and held that the 12-month period in the draft and as a result, the CPA no longer existed. That was the second half, then the second half. Then the CPA appealed to the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court ruled that the land indeed belongs to the CPA because they said that the CPA cannot be disadvantaged as a result of associated issues that, for instance, they're not being able to secure permanent registration within the 12-month period that Principal Act provides. So basically, it deals with an issue where the traditional leader and the community are fighting for the same piece of land that belongs to the community.
Thank you.
2011, right at the bottom of page 34. How then do you propose to address my concern about limiting the time within which CBA may voluntarily dispose of land? I can see the intention here, but you've got something in mind which tells us exactly how you propose to address that. Thanks.
I guess we still have time to go to the Bahasa case, because thank you to the Concord citizens, associated to Concord. Still can't claim that the local party belongs to an individual. That's what I'm saying. But I see the technical ground of things, but in principle. But I guess that's not what we discussed now. I did refer to it, so you correctly responded. But my issue, which you have also responded, is about the matter that refers to the House of Traditional Leaders and where possibly your opinion. I wouldn't seek to just suppose this is the opinion of the Chief Leader or Advisor about it. Because I hold a different view. There's no customary issue here. There's no traditional issue here. There's an issue of a land claim processed via this beloved LCC, and she gives these people their land. Now, what has got to do with any chief or Hindu now king then, for goodness sake? And because we like complicated issues, or people claiming this land now, you know, it's like a biblical one. People got into the of fire. When they came out, they were four. Yeah? They went there three, but they come out, they four. People claim land being 40, and then by the time they then must own, they must be 41, including some traditional leaders. So in my view, it's all about the department via the CFCC in strict terms now, you know, on a light note. These people winning, then forming a CPA. I really fail to see what and where, in terms of the sequence of law, where would not in the highly technical sense, of course, but where would this need be to involve the House? I honestly fail to see this. It's been a recommendation made, but remember, we are also a principal, like in some sense, the chief state law advisor might be a principal. Please convince us, because we are saying with this law, we need to take it to the House of Traditional Leaders. I love them so much. I have a sense I'm a traditional leader to a big one. See, I'm winning. But we don't need to really keep taking things where they don't belong and make those beloved traditional leaders to be so busy with a statute that really would not necessarily have their competence required. And I had asked as part of a sub-question that what becomes the status of their interaction, with the draft statute? What becomes the status of their interaction? Here they come with 20 comments. How shall we proceed with those things? I don't know if it's a mere matter of checking, really. If it is, then perhaps I can write it. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe briefly. You note that is the opinion of the chief state advisor, that the city must be defined. And the department we we don't have a problem with that, because we also believe that the provision has a bail on their role, to the extent that instance, traditionally leaders are the ones who lost claims for restitution on the Abuja community, which is also what happened in the Kadabahapara community. Traditional leaders lost claims for certain portions of their land. The CTA lost certain portions. So the disputes around, you know, piece of land that was claimed by the CTA and gave restitution to the CTA. But he had also had those that he had claimed that was restituted to in his name, not in the traditional country's name, that he had absolute control over. So I guess it's not the only chief that I'm sure the CLCC can speak more in terms of how to put the claim we can claim. But the Restitution Act provides that when an application provision is made, when restitution is made to the claimant.
Yeah.
And the claimant could be the traditional leader, could be the council, the CCPA, and all those things.
One question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gracias. Thank you.